We are holding on Samach Gimel Amud Bey's 10 lines from the bottom. Line begins he. We're getting back now to the dinim of Eruv Chatzeres and in particular Schiras Rishus. We said in the Mishnah that if you have one or more goyim living in a chatzer together with Jews, then you can't do an Eruv in the regular way. You have to do Schiras Rishus. You have to rent the premises from the goy in order to be able to make an Eruv Chatzeres or Shituf Mavayis. We said in the Gemara the reason for that was the Chachamim wanted to make it more difficult. The Chachamim wanted to make something that is going to be difficult to accomplish because the goy may not want to rent out his premises. And then the result is that then you're going to give up and you're not going to want to live together. You're not going to live in the same mavui as the goy. And the advantage of that is that way you won't learn from his ways. So we had a machlokas in the Mishnah, a mayor, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, whether that applies even if it's one Jew and one goy, or do we say one Jew is normally not going to live with one goy anyway because the goy is choshered on shvichus damim, he may kill the yid, and therefore the yid is going to figure it's dangerous to live there in the first place. So the mayor says that doesn't make a difference, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it does, and therefore you don't need schiras or shus if it's one Jew and one goy. But if it's more than one Jew and one goy, then definitely you need schiras or shus. So now the Gemara is going to, tell us a case involving this, from which we're going to learn another din or a couple of other dinim regarding this matter of schiras rishus. The Gemara tells, "Hahu mavoya da have a dayor ba lachman bar ristak." There was a certain mavoy where Jews lived there, and also there lived there a guy named Lachman bar Ristak. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanan, who has an interesting girsa that the guy's first name was not Lachman but rather Haman. Amrulay Ogolon Rishusach. So they asked him, rent us your Rishus so that we'll be able to carry, so we'll be able to make a Shituf Mavoyas and be able to carry between our Chatzeres and the Mavoy. Loy Ogolahu, he didn't want to rent it to them. So if as Rabbeinu Hananel and Tosfos say his first name was Haman, then he lived up to his namesake. If his first name was Lachman, then okay, yeah. Anyway. So also Amrulay Labaya. So they came and told Abaya, we have a problem. How are we supposed to do a Shituf Mavoyis over here if the guy is not willing to do Schiras Rishus to us? Now, of course, Abaya could have answered them, you know, look, this is the whole reason why the Chachamim made this Takana in the first place. Don't live in a Mavoy where a Goy lives over there. But Abaya wanted to find a way for them to be able to do it, at least in the short term. Eventually, longer term, yeah, they should see about living someplace else. But for right now, he needed a solution for them. There is, by the way, I did see from one of the Rishonim, Reb Meir HaMachiri, I think his name was, in a sefer called Seichel Tov. He lived about a generation after Rashi. He wants to say that this Lachman bar Ristak was actually a Yid in Amaretz, but everybody else seems to say that he was a Goy. Anyway, so they asked him for Schiras Rishus. He said no. Also, Omer Leila Abaya, so they came and told Abaya what's going on. Omer Lahu, so he tells them here's a way around it. But Zilu Batilu Rishasaychu Lagabe Chad, go be Mavato Rishus to one of you. Now, usually, Bitul Rishus would be, we've talked about before, we're going to talk about in more detail later on in our perek. Usually, Bitul Rishus would be if one person forgot to participate in the Eruv for whatever reason, then he's mevatel his rishus to everybody else. Now, in effect, it's considered as though he doesn't live there, as though he's only a guest there. A guest doesn't aser. So therefore, then everybody else is able to carry from their houses to from between their houses and the chatzer, or between their chatzeres and the mavoi, and just he's not allowed to. And we're going to see later on in the perek dinim a bit or rishus, and how you can be flexible with that, etc. So like this, Abaye is recommending to them, what you do is, here you do, all of you should be mevatel your rishus to one of you. So you have a bunch of Jews over there. You have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. So they're all going to be mevatel rishus relative to Reuven. In effect, in other words, they're all going to be considered Reuven's guests. Now, so Rashi explains. So what does that accomplish then? If they do bitul rishus, they're still not going to be able to carry from their houses to the chotzer or from their chatzeres to the mavui. Only he will be able to. So what are they accomplishing by that? So Rashi explains. First of all, it accomplishes that what it accomplishes is that any kalim that were in the mavui And first of all, any kalim that were in the mavri at the beginning of Shabbos, they'll be able to carry them throughout the mavri, as opposed to if they weren't mevato rishus and couldn't make a shittuf mavoyus at all, they wouldn't even be able. They would only be able to carry them less than 4 amos at a time. And number two, also any kalim that were in that were in Reuven's house at the beginning of Shabbos will be able to be carried out to the mavri. So that would be what we'd accomplish by doing Bittul Rishus. Tosfos and a couple of other Rishonim have some problems with Rashi's explanation. It seemed the fact that the business about only being able to carry only 4 amos in the Mavri is only according to one opinion, and that's not the halacha. The halacha is actually that any kalim that were in the Mavri at the beginning of Shabbos that can carry throughout the Mavri regardless whether they made a shittuf or not. So Tosfos doesn't really like Rashi's explanation of what they would accomplish by it, but they don't really give an explanation of what else other than Rashi's explanation it would accomplish. But in any case, they'd be able to make a shittuf mavoyus this way. So this way, by doing Bittul Rishus, Havalei Yochid B'Mokim Nachri, in effect then what you have is you have one person living in a Mavoi together with a Goy, V'Yochid B'Mokim Nachri Le'Osso. And as we said, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and we said yesterday the Halacha is like him, then that doesn't, one Yid and one Goy is not Osso. Amrule, so the people asked Abaya, how does that work? After all, the whole reason why that works is, as we said before, is because it's not usual for one Jew and one Goy to live together, because again, the Jew is afraid that the Goy may kill him. He's choshed on shvichas damim, and therefore, to begin with, the Jew is not going to live there for very long. So that's the reason. So that. That's why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov allows it, because he says, since it's not a stable thing, it's not going to last long term anyway. It's not a usual thing in the first place. In general, the Chachamim don't make gzeiros about things that are unusual. So over here, it's unusual like this, but here, it's not so unusual. It's common enough that many Jews live in one mavri together with a goy. So how does the Bittul Rishus, how is that going to accomplish anything that we should say that we should say it should work? So he answers them, well, that everybody should be mevato rishus to one person is also something unusual. And again, something that is unusual, the chachamim don't make a gzeira on. It was usually Bittul Rishus is the other way around, where one Jew who forgot to participate in the Eruv is mevatel his rishus, and now he's not allowed to carry things from his house to the chatzur or vice versa, but here that everybody should be mevatel rishus to him is not the usual way of doing things. So therefore, we're back to that's not something unusual that Chacham won't make a gzeira on. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Also, Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yeshua, Amr l'Shmaita Kamei de Rava." So Rav Huna b'Rei de Rav Yeshua went and told over this statement and this discussion to Rava. That Abaye is proposing that we fix up the situation by having everybody be mevato rishus to the one yid, and then the one yid can make, and then the one yid doesn't need a shittuf mavoyus with in order to be able to carry in that mavoy. Amalei, so Rava said that doesn't seem to work. Im kein bitalta toras eruv mayus mavoy. If you do it that way, then you're taking away the whole concept of eruv from that mavoy. Namely, from then on, what are you going to do? But Pashtus, in the future, this Lachman Baristak is not going to be willing to do Schiras Rishus either. So the result is every week you're going to be doing that, and then every week you're going to be Mevato Rishus and not making a Shittuf Mavoyas in that Mavoy. So therefore, you're going to make it, there's not going to be, people are going to forget the whole concept that you need a Shittuf Mavoyas in order to carry in the Mavoy. So the Gemara says, okay, so what's the problem? Dema'arvi. So, okay, let them make their shittuf anyway. Let them gather together the food and say we're making a shittuf. It won't actually be valid lahalacha because you have the goy living over there who was not willing to be seicher rishus. But we'll make an eruv anyway. This way, they won't forget about the concept of making an eruv. Or eruv over here really means a shittuf mavayas. So this way, they won't forget about the concept. But like this, the actual reason that they'll be mutter to carry is based on the bittul rishus rather than on the schiras rishus. Gemara says that the still Rava says that doesn't work. Yomru Eruv Moyo B'Makom Nachri. People are going to mistakenly think that an Eruv is effective when there's a goy living there without doing Schiras Rishus. Okay, the Gemara says D'machri Zinan. Okay, so what we'll do is we'll make an announcement in the Mavri. We'll make an announcement. You should know we're not actually making the Eruv in order for it to be effective. We are not going to carry from our Chatzeres into the Mavri. Only the one Yid that we Mavato Rishus to, Ruven, is going to be able to. The fact that any carrying is being done in this Mavri is because, in effect, it's the property of Reuven only for Shabbos. The problem with that is, Rava says, Achraz to Ladardiki. What about are announcements effective for children? In other words, what's going to happen? This is going to continue like this for a long time to come. Eventually, the old generation is going to be gone. The new generation is going to grow up. They're not going. They may not hear the announcement. Just because you make an announcement doesn't mean that the kids hear it. So they're going to grow up thinking that you're able to make a shutuf mavoyis when there's a goy there without doing schiras or shush. So Rava, in other words, is saying that the whole thing is not going to work. Even according to Abaya's thing about being Mavato Roshus, we had actually at the beginning of the Perek where we said that Ein Eruv Moyo B'Mokom Akum, the Ein Bitul Roshus Moyo B'Mokom Akum, that Bitul Roshus doesn't work when there's a guy there. You need Davchas Schirus Roshus. So a couple of Achronim, including the Torah Schaim, talk about maybe Abaya disagrees with that, or maybe Abaya would say that means you can have the guy be Mevato Roshus, but you can have Jews be Mevato Roshus to each other, even though there's a guy there. Whatever the case, the point is the Rava is saying that it's not going to work because, fine, and principle it might work, but we have the problem that then in the future it's going to be misunderstood and people are going to think that you're able to make an Eruv and you're able to do Bitul Roshus in such cases when there's a goy there without doing Schiras Roshus. So what do you do? Ela Amar Rava. So Rava says no. Rather, the solution to the problem is as follows. Lezel Chad Minayu, let one of the Jews go. It could be somebody who lives in that Mavri. It doesn't have to be, though. It could just be any Yid. Likrivle, let him become friendly with this guy, with this Lachman Bar Ristak. Imagine if the guy's name is, as Rabbeinu Chananel and Tosfos says, then Haman, then you have a Yid has to become friends with Haman. Anyway, obviously it's not the same Haman from the Megillah, but still the namesake. Anyway, so a Yid should become friendly with him. V'lishel minei duchta. Then he should get friendly with him to the point where he can ask to borrow from him a place in the house where he can put something of his own. V'leinach be'midi, and actually place something over there. And then the result is midi dehavalek schiroy ulakitoy. What that accomplishes is now the yid who's the guy's friend is now considered like a hired worker or like the one who is collecting the produce or whatever of the guy, and therefore he's considered an agent a shliach on behalf of the guy. The Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, afilu schirav, afilu lakitoy, noisin eruv v'dayay. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that even a socher or loket, even a hired worker or a temporary worker for a goy is able to give the eruv, and that's enough. So a couple of details over here. First of all, when he says that he borrows from him a place where he can put something, there's a number of points in this. If he only gives him one specific place, that may not be good enough. But what it is if you borrow a place from somebody in somebody's house to put something, what happens if later on the person happens to need that particular spot? Then he himself may move the thing to someplace else. So therefore, in effect, it comes out that you've rented the person's entire property, because like this, right now you only put your thing in the one place, but eventually it may be moved someplace else. And therefore that's effective. The Beis Yosef talks about that and on these dinim. There's also a point when we say that he places something there, does he actually have to place it there, or is it enough that he borrowed a place where he could place something if he wanted to? That you have different opinions about. I think the halacha is you actually have to place something there. And another thing, when we say noisin eruv v'dayoy, so what does that mean now? Does it mean that the yid can act in the place of the goy and now do, but schiras rishus is still going to require? So now, in other words, the yid, who is now the schiroy lekitay of the goy, is now able to, on behalf of the goy, do schiras rishus. So now they can go to the yid and say, now, Reb Yid, we want to rent from you the property that belongs to the goy in order to be able to carry, to make an eruv and carry in the chotzer. Or does it mean that now that you have a yid acting on behalf of the goy, then they don't even need schiras rishos? It's enough, they can just make an eruv in the regular way that this yid can participate with the food for the eruv like everybody else. That last point is also machlokas rishonim. It brings both opinions in Shulchan Aruch, whether the yid has to still do schiras rishos on behalf of the goy, or whether he can just participate in the regular eruv and ignore the goy altogether. In Shulchan Aruch, it mentions both opinions. The Alter Rebbe says it's better to be choshesh for the first one, meaning that you should have the yid do schiras rishos on behalf of the goy. But that's how Rava says, that's how you can fix up the situation, make it that schiras rishos will be able to be accomplished by this yid who is in effect, in a certain sense, acting on behalf of the goy. So Amalei Abaya le Rabbi Yosef. So now Abaya asks Rabbi Yosef, what about, let's ask a more general question, what about Rashi, by the way, defines socher means somebody that you hire for year-round jobs, and lokit to somebody that you hire during the harvest season to help with the harvesting. So whatever the case, the point is he's an agent, he's working on behalf of the goy. So Abaya asked Rabbi Yosef, within this din that we're talking about, that a socher or loket of a goy is able to do the schiras rishus or participate in the erev chatzeres, as the case may be, what about hoyusham chamisha schira vehei lekitay mahu? What if you have a bunch of schirim or a bunch of lekitim? Now, what happens? The situation is, what if they're living on the premises of the goy's house? Now, they're not actually, we're not talking about, for example, that they rented the premises from the goy, because then, of course, you have all of them are going to aser. What we're talking about, Rashi, and Rashi also explains, we're also not talking about where they all stay in the same room, because that we're going to learn later on. That we're going to learn later on in our parak. If you have a bunch of people staying together in one room, then they count as one person for the purposes of eruv. So the question is, let's say each of them has their own room on the goy's premises, but they're not renting it from the goy. They're boarding there basically while they're working for the goy. So let's say the goy hired five Jews or however many Jews to work for him during the harvest season. The question, each of them, let's say, is living in a different room of the house, but they're not actually renting it. They're just there while the work is going on. And the goy has the right at any time to say, you know what, I'm firing you and I'm kicking you out. So the question is, would, if you had a bunch of people like that, would we say, given that we're considering them like the owner, of the place, insofar as we just said the din, that they can give the eruv or they can do schiras rishus on behalf of the goy, would we say that now also each of them is considered a bailam of the house? Then you would have, then each of them would still have to participate in the eruv, because otherwise you have five people, or even if it's not five, even if it's two people who use the chotzer in common, then you need an eruv chatzeros or shittuf mavayis. So would that be the case, or would we say maybe we only say that they're considered to be living there and to be bailam over the property, maybe only lekula, as far as that they can do the eruv or they can do schiras rishus on behalf of the goy, but not lechumra to say that they should create a problem if no eruv was made, or that each of them has to participate in the eruv. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him the second way. Im omru schiru elokite lahokol, yomru schiru elokite lahachmir. When do we say this concept of sachir velokit? Only when it results in a kula. We don't say, when it comes a lachumra out of it, where we would say if we consider these schirim elokitim to be bailim over the property, that therefore they should need to make an eruv between them in order to carry around the goy's property. In other words, the scenario is, let's say, so there's no other Jews living in the chotzer or mavre. Let's say you just have it's a house belonging to a goy. You have a bunch of houses, let's say, belonging to a goy that all open up onto one chotzer. You have Jews who are working for this goy and are boarding over there. They're not working on Shabbos, obviously, but they still have their rooms rooms that he's giving them for the duration of as long as they're working for him. So the point is, what we're saying is, what Rabbi Yosef is answering Abaya is, we don't consider them bailim on the property for that purpose. We consider them bailim lakula in the sense that we don't have to worry. Therefore they can do schiras rishus from one of them and be able to make an eruv over there. Or according to the second opinion, that they don't even need schiras rishus. That they're just able to give the eruv food, but not lachumra to say that we should be considering that we have a chatzah over here that has five Jews over there, and therefore they need an eruv chatzeres. You wouldn't need that, and that's the halacha. So the Gemara says gufa. Getting back to what we said before, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Afilu Schiroi VaAfilu Lakitei Noisin Eruv VeDayoi. That Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the name of Shmuel that even a sacher or a locket is able to give the eruv, and that's enough. Again, giving the eruv means either that he's able to do schiras rishus on behalf of the guy, or it means that even that schiras rishus is not even necessary; that he can just participate in the eruv just like any other yid in the chotzer. So the Gemara tells about that. Omer of Nachman kamamalya hashmaita. Rab Nachman, when he heard this, he said, "How great is this Shmua? How great is this statement? I really like this. In other words, I really like this. I really like this explanation. I really like this halacha that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmua." On the other hand, Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel. On the other hand, there was a different din that Rabbi Yehuda once said in the name of Shmuel, namely, Shasa Revius Yayin Al Yoira, that if a person drank a revius of wine, he's not allowed to paskin halacha after that. Tosfos brings a different girsa that not Al Yoira, but Al Yispalel, but he's not allowed to daven after he drank a revius of wine. Tosfos doesn't like that girsa. However, the Rif and some other Rishonim do have that girsa, and that is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if a person is drunk, we're going to discuss this later on in the sugya, that if a person drank a revius of wine, then he's not allowed to daven until the effect of the wine dissipates. So when Rab Nachman heard that, Amar Rab Nachman, so again, the girsa we have in front of us in the Gemara is that a person is not allowed to paskin halacha in that case, and the Rif's girsa is he's not allowed to daven. Amr Rab Nachman loy mal yochol shmeitza. So Rab Nachman reacted to that. He said, "This is not a very nice statement in Torah, and I can show it's not really correct." Dehana, because Rab Nachman says, "Look at me. Kol kama d'loy shasini revit yosad chamra." Just the opposite. If I don't drink a revius of wine, loy tzila d'atori, then my mind is not so clear. Al derech, like we have elsewhere in Shas, where Rava says that chamra v'rechni pachim, that wine and good fragrances opened up my mind and made me better able to learn Torah. So Rab Nachman is saying the same thing. Wine has a revius of wine has that effect on me. Without the wine, I can't learn clearly. So what are you telling me that if you drank a revius, you shouldn't be allowed to pass? And it seems backwards. Amalei Rava. So Rava says to Rab Nachman, "My time, Amar Mar Hochi. Why are you, Rebbe, talking like that?" Meaning, Rava does not have a problem with Rab Nachman's opinion. Fine, Rab Nachman, being an Amora, is entitled to argue with Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, who are also Amoraim, and say that he doesn't agree with their halachas. But Rava's asking Rab Nachman, "Why are you expressing yourself like that? This teaching is good, Kamamalya Hoshmaitza, versus this teaching is not so good, Loimalya. Why are you doing that?" Ha'amar Rab Acha Bar Chanina. Didn't Rab Acha Bar Chanina say, "My dichtiv v'roya zoynes yoivad hoin"? What does the pasuk mean in Mishle? Somebody who frequents, who goes a lot together with zoynes will lose a fortune. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk, of course, means exactly what it sounds like. If a person patronizes zoynes a lot, he's going to end up losing a fortune because he has to pay them their fees. But the Gemara is also darshining that the pasuk has another layer of meaning. Rashi on the pasuk explains that this is the only place in all of Tanakh where you have the word zoynes written out in full, Zion Vav Nun Vav Sof. Every other place where we have the word Zoinos, one or the other of the Vavs is missing. So what does it mean? It means Kola Omer Shmua Zu Na'a V'Zu Eina Na'a. Means if a person says about teachings of Torah, this one is good and this one is not so good. Zoinos Meloshen Zen Meloshen Zu Na'a. Ramar Shah points out the second vav over there, in the word zonus, the second vav, the gematria breaks down to an aleph and hey, because they have the same gematria, six. So the word zonus breaks down to zunoe. So a person who talks like that, this teaching in Torah is good, this one is not good, ma'abed honesh al Torah. He's going to end up losing the fortune of Torah. In other words, he's going to end up forgetting the things that he actually learned. So therefore, so why are you saying, why Rabbi Nachman, are you saying this teaching is good, this one is not? Amalei hadri bi, so Rabbi Nachman says, you're right, I changed my mind, I won't talk like that anymore. Some of the Mefoshim say that to say Kama Mal Yahoshmaitza in and of itself is not a problem. To say this teaching is very good, I really like this or whatever, in and of itself, that's not a problem. It's when you're saying the second part that Rav Nachman said, that Loy Mal Yahoshmaitza, I don't like this teaching in Torah, then that's not a good thing to do, as Rava is telling us. There's a lot of places. There's a lot of places in the Rebbe's letters and a couple of Maimorim where it discusses this. There's a bunch of letters that the Rebbe wrote to people, especially in the early years, urging them to study Chassidus. These are people who were big Bali Nigla, but the Rebbe was urging them to also spend time on learning Chassidus. And the Rebbe used to quote in this connection, this Gemara over here. If you're saying Shmua Zunav Zuininav, if you're saying, in other words, about an entire section of Torah, in this case Torah Chassidus, that it's not good, it's not for me, then the Gemara is saying over here that's not a good thing. In one place, in at least one place, the Rebbe talks about the idea, why taka should it be that such a person forgets Torah? Because what he's doing is he's reducing Torah to something that's just fits with his tam vadas. Torah is chokhmosa ritzone shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's higher than tam vadas. So if a person approaches Torah with the attitude that it is Hashem's chokhmah and every part of it is good, then Hashem will help that who remember it. But if he starts taking the view that it's something that has to appeal to my chokhmah, so he's degrading the Torah from chokhmosa ritzone shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so therefore he ends up forgetting it. Anyway, so as the Gemara says, Rabbi Nachman says, you're right, I changed my mind and I won't talk like that in the future. So now the Gemara is going to get into more of these dinim about a person who's drunk, what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do in terms of davening and in terms of learning Torah. We're going to start it over here. Then the Gemara is going to digress with some other points, and then we're going to get back to that. So Omar Rava Baravuna, Shosui Al Yispal. If a person drank a little bit, he shouldn't daven, and we're going to define soon what it means a little bit versus a lot. So he shouldn't daven, Vimispal, Tfila Sitfila. But if he davened in such a condition, then Bidyevit, it's a valid tefillah. On the other hand, Shikur Al Yispal, a person who's completely drunk should not daven, Vimispal, Tfila Sitaeva. If he does daven in those conditions, then his tefillah is considered Te'eva, is considered disgusting to Hashem. So heichi dami shosui veheichi dami shikur. What's the difference? How do we define shosui versus shikur? So you're not allowed to be a DUI, davening under the influence, but what's considered under the influence, what's considered actually drunk? So the Gemara tells like this, ki hod rab abba bar shumni v'rab menashe bar yumi yumi gifti, havo kamifteri mihadadi. One time these two chacham, rab abba bar shumni and rab menashe bar yumi yumi gifti, were one time taking leave of each other. Amabra the Nehar Yufti. They had been walking together or staying together or whatever. Now they're leaving, each one going in their different direction. So they're taking leave of each other at the bridge over the river Yufti. Amru, so before they left, before each one went their own direction, Amru, they said, Kol Chad Minan Lema Milsa de la Shmi al Chavre, each of us should say a statement in Torah, a halacha, that the other one has never heard of before. And why should you do that? A person should not take leave, a yid should not take leave of another yid, only from a word of halacha. And it was the last thing you say to each other should be a word of halacha, because that way he'll remember him. In other words, the idea is that this way, in the future, there's a number of different explanations among the Mefoshim, what it means exactly and how it works. The simplest one is this way, in the future, when you say over this halacha, you're going to remember your friend, and that way you'll remember him and you won't forget him. There's an idea when you say something in somebody's name, then you give him a bracha, you say on him, Zochor Latov or something, so that way in the future, you're always mentioning him for good. Marsha in Brachas explains that it also means this way you'll remember the halacha because you'll always associate it with the friend that you just took leave of. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea. I think it's brought in Hayom Yom that when we say that you should lo yipater elamitech dvar halacha means on a deeper level, it should be the kind of vert that makes the other person a mahalach, that makes you and the other person be able to progress and continue and grow greater in your avoda. Anyway, so therefore, so each of us should be saying halacha to the other one that the other one never heard of before. So one of these two chachamim started saying, in connection with the din that we just said, "Heichi dami shosui veheichi dami shikur." What is? How do we define shosui versus shikur? Where again we said a shosui shouldn't daven lachatchila, but b'dieved if he did, then it's a valid tefillah versus a shikur not. So the definition is like this: shosui kol shiyachol adaber lifnei amelach. Shosui is defined if he's still coherent enough to be able to speak in front of a king. So he drank a little bit, but not so much to confuse him. Shikur, kol she'eni yachol adaber lifnei amelach, as opposed to a shikur, would be somebody who is so drunk that he can't talk coherently in front of a king. So the first kind, so neither kind should daven lachatchila. They should both wait until the effect of the wine is dissipated, but only the second one is, we're saying that his tefillah is not even a tefillah. In Shulchan Aruch, actually, the Alter Rebbe mentions that that's it, that nowadays, first of all, all wines are not particularly strong, so a revius is not necessarily enough to have that effect on a person anyway. Brings that from the Trumas Hadeshen, and also there is anyway the fact that we don't always concentrate as much on our davening as we should. So therefore, if a person drank a little bit and he still feels for himself that he's still coherent, then he can go ahead and daven. It would be better if he lets it dissipate. But like we had, you know, yesterday with Simchas Torah, people drink. If you drank a little bit and you're still fully coherent, Even then there may not be as much of a problem with davening as even though for example you drank a revis. Okay, so that was one halacha that one of them said to the other one. Pasach idach v'amar, the other one said a different unrelated halacha. V'amar, he says hamachzik b'nichsei ager, if a person takes possession of the nechasim of a ger, we know that ger shenis gayer kakotin shenoyla dami. So if a ger dies without ever having married and had children, then his nechosim are free for the taking for any yid. So now what happens if a yid all of a sudden, out of the blue, all of a sudden, you have a yid inherited a fortune. All of a sudden, he has this nechsei ager, which he didn't have to work for or anything. And people find it very unusual. Look at that, you know, people find it very unusual and they talk about it. Look at this guy, you know, all of a sudden he came into money because he got the nichsei ager. So therefore you can have a problem of an ayin hara. My yasavi skaimu biyadei, what should he do in order that it should be preserved by him, that it shouldn't end up getting damaged or disappear because of an ayin hara. Yikach behen sefer Torah, he should use some of the money to buy a sefer Torah. And the source of doing that will be then that the rest of that there, that he'll be able to keep the rest of it as well. Otherwise, if he doesn't use it for a dvar mitzvah like buying a sefer Torah, then he may end up losing it as easily as he gained it. Amar of Sheshes, said of Sheshes, says not only in that case of nichse ager, but even afilu baal b'nichse ishtoi, even a husband who has control of his wife's property, the same thing, he should be doing a mitzvah such as writing a sefer Torah with some of the money. So either we're talking about where he inherited the money, or Marsha says we mean even, for example, while they're married, where we know that there's nichsim malug, where the husband has the right to all the payers of it. So if a man marries into money and his wife has nichsim malug, then he should take some of the payers of that and use it for a sefer Torah. In other words, the chiddush is Marsha explains not only in the case of nichsei ager where he has the whole thing, the keren and the payers, but even over here where he has only the payrus, he should still be using some of it towards a sefer Torah or another big mitzvah like that, in order that way the schus of it will be that the keren will stay intact and he'll continue being able to enjoy payrus from it. Rava amar filo ovid iska v'ravach. Rava says not only that, even if a person did a good business deal and earned a profit from it, also he should set aside some of the profits for sefer Torah. And the point is, Marsha says, even though in a case like that, you could say, first of all, with a business, you're always unlike with the other ones, you're still exposed to risk after all. As long as you have a business, there's always potential profits versus losses. Second of all, here you're actually working on the business. You have more reason to say that the success of the business was the result of your hard work and your talents and whatever. Nevertheless, you should still show, you should still use some of it for a Sefer Torah, and the schus of that will help that it'll be successful. Reb Papa, I'm after the matzah metzia. Reb Papa says, even if you just find something, you find something in the street and you get to be able to keep it. So even then, for example, you didn't put anything into it at all. You could think to yourself that it's just a completely random thing that happens. People lose things, so you find them. Nevertheless, you should still use you. Nevertheless, and there's not the point even that it's something that you can daven for, that it should have, you know, well, you could daven for it, but it's not like with the other ones, like Baal B'nichse Ishta and like an Iska is an ongoing thing. You can daven to Hashem that in the future you should have this, that it should be running successfully. A Metzia is a one-time thing. Nevertheless, even then, you should be setting some of it aside for Sefer Torah. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Nachman Meitzchak, afilu kosev hu tefillin. Rav Nachman Meitzchak says, it doesn't even have to be that you write a Sefer Torah with the money. It could even be that you use some of the money for tefillin, where tefillin, first of all, have less kedusha than a Sefer Torah, and it's not used by the tzibur. Tefillin is used by each individual. Even then, also, that'll also help that the other nechassim will be meskayim biyadei, will be preserved, and he'll be able to continue having them. Marsha says that no, that's not what the Gemara means. It means that even if a person is earning money from writing tefillin, you have, and the Gemara mentions elsewhere that in general, people who write Sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzahs for a living usually don't become rich from it. But sometimes you have a person makes a nice business out of it, out of writing tefillin or other things like that, and earns a nice amount of money from it. So Rav Nachman Meitzchak is saying, even in that case, also you should be setting aside some of the money for Sefer Torah. And that way you'll have the source that again, this state of affairs will continue, and you'll be able to continue earning money from the tefillin that you're writing. And v'omer of Chanin v'itamer of Chanina. So Rav Chanin, or some say Rav Chanina, says Maikra, where is a posik where we see this idea that by doing a mitzvah with money that fell into your hand, then the rest of it will be meskayim biyadei. We have a pasuk in Parashas Chukas that describes how the Jewish people fought against Haknani Yoshev Arod, the Knanim who lived in the city of Arod, where Rashi says over there, Rashi brings from Midrashim that actually these were the Amalekim. They dressed up as Knanim. But the point is, what happened? They're having a war over there. The Jewish people said, "Im nosin titin es amaz ebiyodi, if you, Hashem, give over this nation to us and we're able to conquer them, Then I will make their cities cherem, where cherem is a type of hektish, that we're gonna give the spoils of them to hektish." And sure enough they won the battle. So therefore, so we see from that a concept that where you have money falls into your hands, even if they fought hard for it. Marsha points out, now you have earlier in the Torah, you have where it says that Yaakov made a neder when he was leaving Eretz Yisrael on the way to Choron, im yiel kimimodi or shmarani, etc. Then he says, v'chol asher titen li aser asrenu loch, that everything that you give me, I'll take ma'aser from it. But the point is, in other words, Yaakov at least was in a situation, you know, he's in a bad way. So he's making a neder. But over here, we're saying the Jewish people, they're fighting against their enemies. They worked hard for these spoils. And we're saying that actually what they're saying is, we're going to take all the spoils and give them away to Hektish. So we learn from that this idea that if you come into a fortune that you didn't otherwise have, make sure to give at least some of it away for purposes like a Sefer Torah, and that way you'll have the source that it's in the sky and beyond it. Okay. Getting back to what we said about wine, we said again that if a person drank a revius of wine, then he's not allowed to paskin halacha, or according to the Rif's girsa, he's not allowed to daven. So Omer, Rami Bar Abba, Derech Mil V'Sheina Kol Shehu, if a person walks a mil, 2,000 amos, or if a person sleeps a little bit, Mefigin Asayayin, that dissipates the effect of the wine, and now therefore he's able to daven or paskin halacha again. However, Omer of Nachman, Omer Rav Bavua, Lo Yishonu Elo Sheshotze Kedei Revius, that applies only if the person drank exactly a revius. But if he drank more than a revius, then the other way around, kol shekein shederach todos sevishena meshakautoi, then all the more so, walking on the road is going to make him even more confused, and going to sleep is going to make him even more drunk. So in that case, if a person drank more than a revius, then he has to wait until he realizes on himself that he's back to normal, and then he's able to daven or paskin. There's a Gemara in Tainis, by the way, that mentions this also. The Gemara discusses over there the question: are Kohenim allowed to drink wine nowadays? Now, on the face of it, we know that a Kohen is not allowed to do the avoda when he's drunk. Don't you have a problem? Don't you have a concern? Any second the Bais Mikdash could be rebuilt, and then you're going to have Kohenim who are drunk. So how b'chlal are they allowed to drink wine over there? So the Gemara actually brings there a few different opinions. One of them is indeed that Kohenim are not allowed to drink wine. However, the halacha is, the Gemara mentions over there Rebbe's opinion, that takanosan kalkalosan, the fact that what helps them is the fact that we have a confusion nowadays, the fact that no Kohen nowadays knows what Mishmo he belongs to. So anyway, when Mashiach comes and the Bais Mikdash is rebuilt, before any Kohenim start serving in the Bais Mikdash, anyway, Mashiach is going to need to sort them out into Mishmaros, determine which Kohen belongs to which Mishmar, and therefore when they get to serve in the Bais Mikdash. During the time it takes to arrange that, then the wine will be dissipated. The Rebbe used to talk about a lot the idea that we see from that Gemara how we have to expect Mashiach to come every second. Literally, it means every second, because if it weren't for that consideration, that it's going to take time to put the Mishmaris back together, then Taka, Kohen wouldn't even be able to drink wine, even though the Gemara is saying over here, all you have to do is walk a mil, which takes 18 minutes or 24 minutes, and already the wine has gone away. So we see from that you have to, when we say achakalei b'chol yom shiyava, and it means at every moment, it really means at every moment. You could have that, you could have just drunk wine, and within the next 18 minutes, Mashiach could come, and therefore you have to resort to that Gemara, why you, a Kohen, were allowed to drink wine in the first place. Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. The derech mil mafiga asayayin. You're telling me that walking a mil on the road dissipates the effect of the wine, so now the person's not drunk anymore and is able to daven or paskin halacha. Vahatanya, we learn in a brisa, a long story. The brisa goes until way down on the amud. But after we finish with the brisa, then we'll get back to the question. The brisa tells, "Ma'aseh b'Rav Gamliel shoyo roichav al hachamor." It happened once Rav Gamliel was riding on a donkey. V'hoyeh mahalach me'akoy l'kziv. He was traveling from Akoy to Kziv. Both of those are on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. Akoy is further south. Kziv is further to the north. V'hoyeh Rabbi Loi mahalach achrav. Rabbi Loi was walking behind Rav Gamliel. On the way, motzeh gluskin baderech. On the way, Rav Gamliel saw some bread on the ground. So he tells him, Eloi, to gluskin min aderech. Pick up the bread and take it off the ground. As the Gemara is going to explain soon why Rav Gamliel did that. Then, motza nochri achad, as they're traveling further, they find a goy, Amaloi, and Rav Gamliel tells him, Mavgoi, to gluskin alolo me Eloi. Mavgoi, that was the guy's name, take these loaves of bread from Eloi. Nitpaloi Rabbi Loi. So Rabbi Loi came closer to the goy to talk with him. Amalai mehechanata. He asked the goy, "Where are you from?" Amalai me'ayoras shoburgen. And he says, "I come from these villages nearby here where they have huts." Rabbi Loi asked him, "Omashimcha, what's your name?" He says, "Mavgoi Shmeini. My name is Mavgoi," which is what Rav Gamliel called him. So Rabbi Loi asked him, "Klum hikircha Rav Gamliel ma'olam? Did Rav Gamliel ever know you from before, that he knows your name just off the bat?" Amaloi lav, and the guy tells him no. At that moment, Rabbi Loi says, we realize that Rabbi Gamliel was able to know the guy's name with Ruach HaKodesh. Now, Tosfos points out, it's not like the name Mavgoi was unique among Goyim. There were other people in those days who had the name Mavgoi. Nevertheless, it's still considered a Ruach HaKodesh, because not necessarily did this particular one have the name Mavgoi. There is, although, a different explanation from the Oruch, that the word Mavgoi is not the guy's actual name. It's a nickname meaning something like farmer. So in that case, then, the Ruach HaKodesh was that Rav Gamliel realized that the guy is a farmer, even though there wasn't necessarily any outward simon on him that he was. Anyway, So we learn from Sir Rabbi Loi says, at that time, we learned three dinim from what Rabbi Gamliel did. Number one, lamanu she'en ma'avirin al oichlin. We learn from that that you're not allowed to just pass by food that's on the ground. You have bread over here on the ground, and Rabbi Gamliel doesn't say, never mind, let's just ignore it. He tells Rabbi Loi to pick it up, because bizoyin, that food should be left on the ground. Number two, v'lamadnu shehochan achri roiv ovedrachim. We learn from that whether we consider the bread to be mutter or not, we go based on most of the people that pass by on that road. Now, why didn't Rabbi Gamliel tell Rabbi Loi go ahead and eat the bread? Because most of the people traveling on that road at various times were goyim. So therefore, the assumption is that this is pasakum, and pasakum you're not allowed to eat. So therefore, that's why he didn't tell Rabbi Loi to go ahead and eat it. That's why he told it to give it to give the bread to the goy when the goy showed up. So that's the second thing we learn. And v'lamanu shechametze shel nachri achra pesach mutar b'ano. We also learn from that chometz of a goy after Pesach, because that's when this story took place. It was after Pesach that it's mutar b'ano, because we see he's telling Rabbi Loi to give the bread to the goy. Now what's going to happen? Now this goy, mav goy, owes Rabbi Loi a favor. He gave him bread for free. Now in the future, the goy is going to owe Rabbi Loi a favor and do something for him. If it was chometz that had belonged to a yid over Pesach, then you couldn't do that. But because we can assume that it was a goy's chometz, because again, that's we said most of the people who walked on that road were goyim, then therefore he was able to have Rabbi Loi give it to the goy. Tosfos points out that if we were to assume that it was a yid's bread, then it wouldn't necessarily be also either, because then we could assume maybe it was baked after Pesach. Most Jews get rid of their chametz before Pesach, so then we'd have more reason to think that maybe it was that maybe it was baked after Pesach. But here, since it was goyish bread anyway, the likelihood is it was baked during Pesach, or at least it was in the goy's possession during Pesach. But it doesn't matter, because after Pesach, that's mutar b'hano. Continues the story. Kivinchi Gil Kziv, when Rabbi Gamliel reached Kziv, Ba'echad li Shoil al Nidroi, then somebody came to Rabbi Gamliel to ask to be Matu Neder. So Rabbi Gamliel says to the one who is with him, now the one who is with him means Rabbi Loi, why it's calling him the one who is with him rather than calling him Rabbi Loi like before, we'll talk about that soon. So Rabbi Gamliel asks Rabbi Loi, Klum Shasinu Revius Yayin Haitalki, have we drunk, meaning I, drunk a revius of Italian wine? Amalei Hein, and Rabbi Loi tells him yes. So Rabbi Gamliel says, in that case, I can't be Matu Neder right now. Yitayel acharenu achi yofig yenenu. Then let this person, if he wants me to be Matu Neder, I have to wait until the wine dissipates. So let him walk behind, let him walk behind us, adshe yofig yenenu, until the wine dissipates, and then I'll be able to be matur neder for him. V'til acharein gimel milin. So this person ended up walking behind Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Loi for 3 mil. So it was 3 mil. So you're talking about 3 kilometers. You're talking about a little less than 2 miles, let's say. Adshe yigil asulma shel tzur, until they reach the ladder of tzur, which is it's the mountains at the north of Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, it's on the border between Israel and Lebanon. It's called Rosh HaNikra. So it's a couple of miles north of Kziv, as we're saying over here. So they reach that point. Kivinchi Giel Asuma Detzur. Once they reach that point, that ridge of mountains, we actually learned about it earlier in the Masechta as well. We were talking about whether Eretz Yisrael can be considered to be surrounded by walls, because on one side of it you have Sulma Detzur. Anyway, so when they reach that point, Yorad Rav Gamliel min achamar. Rav Gamliel got down off his donkey, v'nis atif, and he wrapped himself in a talis, v'yoshav, and he sat down, v'hitur lo nidrei, and he was matur neder for the guy. To be matur neder, by the way, you need either 3 people, or you can have a yochid mumcha. Nowadays, we don't have a yochid mumcha, so you always have 3 people or more being matur neder, but where you have a yochid mumcha, and Rav Gamliel was, then he could be matur neder alone. So the Gemara continues, We learned at that time many things from what Rabbi Gamliel just did. Lamadno shiravias yain haitauki mishakir. Number one, we learn that a revius of Italian wine is enough to make a person drunk, because therefore, Rav Gamliel, once he finds out, once he remembers, once Rav Gamliel reminds him that we drank, that you drank a revius of yain haitauki, then he can't be matur neder right away. Number two, v'lamadno shikur al yoda. We learn from that that a person who is drunk is not able to paskin halacha, as we just said before. Number three, v'lamadnu shederech mefigur asayayin. We also learn that walking on the road helps dissipate the effect of the wine. V'lamadnu she'en mefir nedor l'rochu v'lamahalach ela oimid. We also learn that you can't be matur neder when you're riding or when you're walking or when you're standing still. Ela yoshev, you dafka have to be sitting, because that's what we're saying. Rav Gamliel got off the donkey and sat down and was matur neder. So now that we have the whole story, Katoni Mias Shloisha Milin. Now, the bottom line is, the Braisa says that the guy ended up walking behind Rav Gamliel 3 mil. Now, obviously, Rav Gamliel is not going to make him walk extra just because he doesn't feel like getting off the donkey earlier than that. Obviously, it means it took 3 mil for the effect of the wine to dissipate. So what do you mean that 1 mil is enough? The answer is, shiny yain hoitauki de mashakur tfei. Yes, but it's different with Italian wine. That's stronger. So therefore, you need more time for the effect of it to dissipate. If Rav Gamliel had drunk regular wine, then Itaka would have only needed 1 mil. The question with that is, so in that case, then, if yain hoitauki is more, if yain hoitauki is makes a person more drunk than regular wine, then in other words, a revius of that is the equivalent of more than a revius of regular wine. We said earlier on the Amud, V'Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, Lo Shonu Ala Shoshos Revius, this that we say that walking, that going on the road helps dissipate the effect, is only if you drank exactly a revius. Aval Shoshi Yosim Revius, Kol Shekin Derech Todosei, V'Sheinim Ashakauteh, if you drank more than a revius, then just the opposite, going on the road or sleeping will make the effect of it even worse. So if we're saying that Rav Gamliel drank a revius of Italian wine, and that's stronger, and it has a stronger effect than regular wine, then in that case, walking 3 mils shouldn't have helped. It would just make him more confused. The answer is rochov shiny. The answer is it's different when he's riding. When we say when a person drank more than a revius and then he's walking, that it makes him more confused. That's talking about walking. But riding is not as much of a tircha. Therefore, that does have the same effect. So the Gemara says actually hashta de osis lahachi. So now that you reach that point, once you make that distinction between walking and riding, then we can say also the rami ba'aba like nami like kasha. Then we don't really have the question on. Then we don't really have the question on rami ba'aba either. Where we said that just walking 1 mil is enough. So the question was, why did Rav Gamliel have to walk 3 mil? Because again, you could say rochov shiny. You could say the other way around. In other words, you could say, in effect, riding has a kula and a chumra in it. It has a kula in that if you drank more than a revius and you walk, then you're going to get more confused, more muddled. But if you ride, then it'll help clear your mind. On the other hand, it has a chumra that when it comes to exactly a revius, now the Gemara is saying maybe there's takanata difference between Italian wine and other wine. But if you're walking, then 1 mil is enough. But if you're riding, then you need 3 mil. So that explains why Rav Gamliel needed the 3 mil. Again, either because it was Yain Haitauki, which is stronger, and therefore 1 mil is not enough, 3 mil were required, or in general, because when you're riding, you need 3 mil rather than one mil. Okay. So the Gemara asks still on this story, Aini. Now we said that one of the things we learned from this story is that you're not allowed to be matur neder when you're riding on an animal or standing or walking or whatever. You dafka have to be sitting. So Aini, the Gemara says, is that so? We learn Rav Nachman says that you're able to be matur neder whether you're walking or standing or riding. So why does Rav Gamliel have to stop and get off the donkey? The answer is Tanoi. The answer is it's actually a machlokas tanoim, because ikalamanda and the machlokas tanoim is based on the following issue: the ikalamanda ama poschin bacharata. There is an opinion that the chacham has to start with charata. In other words, Rashi explains starting with charata means that the chacham, when he wants to be matur neder, has to ask the person We have to try to find a reason that the person should be able to say, you know what, if I had thought of this particular detail, then I never would have made the neder. So if you need to do that, then Rav Gamliel holds you need to. So therefore, you need Yishuv Adas for that. You need to have your mind calm and at ease. You can't do that when you're riding or walking or whatever. You have to sit down for that. Therefore, Rav Gamliel has to sit in order to be able to think of something like that. As opposed to the Iklam Andoma in Posen Macharata, there's a different opinion that says you don't even need a Charata. The Chacham can just be Matur the Neder even without the person having Charata at all. So therefore, according to that, that would be what Rav Nachman is saying, that therefore, according to that, then you don't need, so you wouldn't need to sit down, because all you need to be able to do it, say, is Hoto Aneder, and for that you don't need Yishuv Adas. For that you can be walking or riding or whatever. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation of Rashi, because we really don't find anybody who says that you can just be Matir Neder like that without having some kind of Charata. Rav Nachman himself says that you need some kind of Charata. So Tosfos explains differently. Rabbi Natam and Tosfos explains differently. Poschen b'charata would be the other way around. Poschen b'charata just means that it would be a valid method of being matir neder, just to say, do you regret making that neder? Without even getting to why you regret it, whatever, do you regret making the neder? And if the person says yes, then you can be matir neder on that basis. So according to that, then again, you don't need much yishuv adas for that. Therefore, you could do that when you're riding or walking or what have you. As opposed to ein poschen b'charata would be the opposite of what Rashi says. Not that it means that you don't even need charata. It means the other way around. Charata is not enough. You have to actually find grounds for the person to be matir nedu. You have to find, for example, Tosfos brings from a Gemara in Nedarim, let's say, well, the Gemara itself is going to bring an example here soon, but in Nedarim, for example, the Gemara gives an example that we ask him, we ask him if 10 people were to have come to begin with and talked you out of making this neder, would you have made it? And he would say no. So then in that case, that's more of a Pesach, more than just saying, do you regret it, without saying why he would regret it. So therefore, so according to Tosfos, then it's the other way around. If we say poschen b'charata, in other words, charata is enough, you don't need much yishuv adas for that. All you have to have is the guy will say, yes, I regret that I made the neder, and then he can be matir neder. So for that, you don't need much yishuv adas for that. That Rav Gamliel could do while he's riding on the donkey. As opposed to if you say that ein poschen b'charata, that you actually need to find grounds for him to revoke the neder, then Rav Gamliel needs to sit and think about that, and he can't do that while he's riding on the donkey. Okay. To Amar Rav Baba Chana, Amar Rav Yechanan. In fact, Rav Baba Chana says in the name of Rav Yechanan, my posach le Rav Gamliel lahu gavra, taka, what Pesach did Rav Gamliel use for this person to be matir neder? He quoted him a posach from Mishlei, Yesh boite kemadkeres chorev. There is a person who speaks and kemadkeres chorev, and it's like the piercing of a sword. Uloshoyin chachamim marpe, but the tongue of the chachamim is a healing thing. In other words, the Gemara is explaining that the simple meaning of the pasuk means that sometimes you have a person who speaks badly, speaks lashon hara, whatever, and causes damage to other people. As opposed to if you talk like a chacham and you don't talk lashon hara, then that'll be a healing thing. But the Gemara is darshaning that the word boite is related to the word making a neder, because you have the word bitois fasayim, as there's a type of shvur or neder. So yesh boite, if a person makes a neder, kimad kereis chorev, is like the piercing of a sword, meaning kola boite roi ledoikre becherev, a person who speaks out a neder deserves to be pierced with a sword. But you have the tongue of the Chachamim can heal it, because the Chacham can be matir neder. So that was the Pesach, in other words, that Rav Gamliel says to the guy, if you knew that you're really not supposed to make nedarim, and you should really be chayiv misa b'dei shamayim for making them, would you have made a neder? And he says no. So that was the Pesach that Rav Gamliel used. Okay, so the Gemara says, v'omamar v'ein ma'avirin ala oichlin. We said one of the things we learned from the story of Rav Gamliel is you're not allowed to pass by food without, by the way, Tosfos brings from the Gemara in Nedarim that actually even the Rav Gamliel was saying over here, use that as a Pesach. The halacha is you can't use that as a Pesach. Then the person is going to be so afraid of that. What, I should be pierced by a sword for that? Then he's going to be afraid and falsely say that he didn't mean to make the neder, even though maybe he did. So you need a different kind of Pesach. Okay. So we said you're not allowed to pass by food that's on the ground. You have to pick it up. So the Gemara says, loyshanu ela b'doros harishonim. That only applies in earlier generations. She'ein b'nos Yisrael prutzis b'kshafim, where Jewish women are not commonly doing kishuf. So then there's no problem of picking up the bread. There's no problem that kishuf might have been done with the bread. Aval b'doros achronim, but in later generations, she'b'nos Yisrael prutzis b'kshafim, where Jewish women are commonly doing kishuf. And over here we said this was a road that goyim frequented. But the point is, you have even the goyim are doing kishuf, but even you had some Jewish women are involved as well. So therefore, some ma'avirin, then you're allowed to pass by food that's on the ground, because then if you pick it up, you may be subject to their kishuf. Tana, so we learn in a braisa, shleimin ma'avirin, psisin ein ma'avirin. The way that works then is if you see a whole loaf of bread, you're allowed to pass by without picking it up. But if you see pieces of bread, then you have to pick them up, because pieces of bread are not going to have been used for kishuf. So the question is, what do you mean? People don't use pieces of bread for kishuf, they only use whole loaves. You have a pasuk in Yechezkel, he's criticizing Jewish, telling a nevuah against Jewish women who are using kishuf, and among other things, so the problem, besides that kishuf itself is asur, he points out in the psukim over there, they're causing, therefore, with their kishuf, that people should die before their time, prematurely. It's also, it also has an effect on the people's morale. They tell people who are doing averus, it's fine, our kishuf says you'll be happy and healthy and everything, and they tell people who are doing mitzvahs, our kishuf says that you're going to have a hard time in life, and that discourages people from doing mitzvahs and encourages them to do averus. And Yechezkel says over there in the pasuk, "Vatechalalena oisiel ami, you desecrated me to my people, to the Jewish people, b'shalei sa'orim, with handfuls of barley, or with soisei lechem, and with pieces of bread." So it sounds like, in other words, they're using the handfuls of barley and the pieces of bread to do their kishuf. So we see that they do kishuf with pieces of bread as well. The answer is hosam the shakli bagrayu. The answer is the pasuk doesn't mean that they use these things for kishuv. It means these are the kinds of things that they would take as their fee. In other words, the Yechezkel is criticizing them ha'itochen for this tiny amount. You're not even gaining that much from it. All you're gaining from it is a handful of barley or a piece of bread, and you're willing to go and make a chilul Hashem and discourage people from serving the Eibishter and so forth, and causing people to believe in Baal and other avodah zarahs. So we see then that they're not actually doing kishuf with the pieces of bread. To do kishuf, they use whole loaves. Okay, so we're going to go back. We're going to continue tomorrow with what we talked about not davening when you're drunk, about various dinim, about that, and various other related things. We're going to have most of the daf tomorrow is going to be more agada. We have to mention, though, now, in connection with this story of Ram Gamliel and going from Akkoi to Kziv and the loaves of bread and the goy, there's a long, long, detailed explanation from the Rebbe's father, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, in Toras Levi Yitzchak, that goes through the story line by line and piece by piece and explains it in great detail, al pi Kabbalah. It's very long to be able to give over the whole thing, but the part of it is that Rabbi Levi Yitzchak explains, Rav Gamliel represents Chesed. The name Gamliel itself is Meloshim Ki Gamal Aloy, that Hashem gave me great favors. That he's going from Akkoi to Kziv. Akkoi and Kziv have to do with Gvura. Kziv is a stronger kind of Gvura than Akkoi. He's riding on a donkey like Avraham Avinu, which also represents subjugating Gvura. Rabbi Loi, who represents Gvura, is going behind him. Bekitzur, the whole thing, the whole story is about the interplay of Chesed and Gvura, how you use Chesed to be Mavaru Gvura, and also related to them Chochma and Bina, because Chochma and Chesed are both on Kava Yamin, and Bina and Gvura are both on Kava Smol. So for example, he explains that why does he have to ask Rabbi Loi whether we drank wine? Because wine is related to Bina. So Rabbi Gamliel has to ask Rabbi Loi, who's on that Kav, did we drink wine? Rabbi Loi tells him we did. That's also, we said that when they came to Kziv, then somebody came to be Matur Neder, and Rabbi Gamliel says to the one that was with him, did we drink wine? Why doesn't the Gemara call him Rabbi Loi like it did before? So Rabbi Levik explains that Lozeh She'imoi means that this person who came to be Matur Neder is also on the side of Gvura. So he and Rabbi Loi are both on the same side. So therefore, Lozeh She'imoi, therefore the Gemara calls Rabbi Loi, Lozeh She'imoi, the one who was with him, as if to imply, like now he has a partner, now he has somebody else with him who is also on the side of Gvura. And the name of the goy, Mav Goy, also comes up over there. It represents also Gvura of Klippa, because it has in it the shame Mab, and also the word Goy, which means Meloshin Gaiva. That's why he gave him chametz, because that's why he gave him the bread, which was chametz. And he goes on and on over there for about 10 pages or so, explaining in great detail every detail in the story over here, and how each detail, how all of them fit together, and how each one of them represents something about chesed versus gvura, and about chochma versus bina, all these things about what the poschin b'charata, and all these things all are related to that. So the explanation, actually, it's not even the original explanation that Reb Levick started writing, is a Gemara in Makos that also mentions this name Mavgoi. So he started explaining that, then he digresses to talk about our Gemara in Eruvin over there, and goes on for it for pages and pages, and unfortunately the rest of it is missing, so we don't know the end of what he was going to explain in the Gemara in Makos over there. But this is, you know, we have, you know, as we know, we only have, you know, we have five volumes of Reb Levick's writings, but we know that that's only a tiny fraction of what he wrote, because all of what he wrote in all the years before that, except for his letters to the Rebbe, was all lost when he was sent into exile, and later on when the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, took over Dnepropetrovsk. But from the little bit that we have over there in Teres Levi Yitzchok and Lakuta Levi Yitzchok, and all, we can see what a tremendous wealth, and we're hoin shel Torah, like we said on Amud Aleph, we would have had, and we will have when Mashiach comes, when Torah Chadasha Meiti Teitzei.
Question.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, question.
Go ahead, yeah.
We see that someone who drinks a revisa of wine is not supposed to daven. In that logic, then, why are we allowed to bench, which is also a form of tefillah, after we drink wine, making kiddush, for instance?
It's a good question. I guess the answer is that tefillah, you're standing in front of the king, so therefore you're standing and speaking directly to the king, so therefore you need to be clearer in mind. Benching, you're not literally standing in front of Hashem. You have to thank Hashem for your food, but it's not quite the same level of things as davening Shemoneh Esrei, and therefore maybe there's more leeway to be able to bench after you've drank a little bit. Again, obviously if he's shikur, where he can't talk lifnei melech, then maybe not. And you have, by the way, I forgot to mention before, there's a third case which halacha calls higia l'shichrusa shaloit, where a person is so drunk that he's like loit, he has no idea what's going on around him. Then he's b'chlal potter from all mitzvahs until he sobers up.
Yeah, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about a release of wine.
So we're talking about a shosser or a shikur, right? So we're talking about a shosser or a shikur. But the point is, in other words, apparently the idea is that benching, there's a little more leeway than there is for davening, because davening, you're standing literally in front of the king, in front of Hashem, and speaking, and benching not.
It shouldn't make much of a difference being
apparently
standing and sitting.
Apparently it does, though. We have, you know, there are dinim that apply to Shemoneh Esrei that don't apply to other parts of davening also, or benching, right? I mean, you're not allowed to interrupt in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei for anything, unless it's Pekuach Nefesh or something, as opposed to in the middle of benching is like in the middle of Birkas Kriyashma. There are certain things you're allowed to interrupt for. So it's not, even though they're both talking to Hashem, but it's not the same kind of talking to Hashem.
Uh-huh. Okay. Shker.
Shker.